May we start? I suggest we start. So please take your seats. We'll now have one, two, three, four presentations, one after another. I will be asking for questions, but I'd ask everybody to keep the questions short because there'll be enough time for discussion, perhaps at lunch or later. But so we start with Sergei Dmitriev, director of the Flohov Laboratory, status of the factory of super heavy elements and its future prospects. And the floor is yours, thank you.
Dear Mr. Chairman, dear member of Scientific Council, yes, the title of report, status of the factory of super heavy elements. As we well know, during the last years, the six new elements was discovered and more than 50 new transactinide isotopes. And now the seventh period of the periodic table is closed. Moreover, I can say you that this is the only events during the last 30 years when all discovered elements has name. Yes. All these elements were synthesized in the reaction of the actinide target with calcium 48. We use the cyclotron U400. This is parameters of cyclotron. Please look the ion beam current in case of the calcium ion. It's about one particle micro M. One particle micro M. And the main facility for determination of the super heavy element, our gas field recoil separator, transmission efficiency of this separator, about 35%. One particle micro M and 35% of efficiency. We associate our future in counting and developing ongoing research in the field of super heavy elements, physics, and chemistry with the creation of the SHE factory. Yes, this is the main goal of the factory. First of all, it's experiments and the extremely low, less than 100 femtobar cross-section. Synthesis of new SHE in reaction with titanium, chromium. As you remember, then 118, organisone, in the last element, which you can synthesize with using the calcium 48. Then synthesis of new isotope of SHE, study of decay properties, study of oxidation function. And the second, experiments require the high statistic, nuclear spectroscopy, precise mass measurement, study of the chemical properties of super heavy elements. Of course, the basic facility of factory is new cyclotron, DC-280, of course, new experimental building, and separator. This is expected parameters of new cyclotron DC-280. In case of the calcium ion, we expect to reach ion beam current from 10 up to 20 particle micro M. That means at least 10 times more, at least 10 times more than we have today. Yes, this is the main parameters, the energy from 4 up to 8 MeV per annum. Yes, the magnet weight 1,000 ton. Yes, and the injection beam potential up to 100 kilovolt and ratio ARC-Z 4 up to 7. I hope you remember this picture I show is the 1 year ago in our previous scientific council. And assembling of this cyclotron magnet have been started exactly, practically exactly 1 year ago, 15 September 2016. Yes, and then short history. This is the September, middle of September. You see the end of September, middle of October, end of October, November, and really in January, and the end of the previous year, really January this year, the magnet cyclotron was ready for testing. And today, Exactly 2 days ago, we finished the magnetic measurement of the new magnet. Yes, I must tell you that quality is very good. And very important for us that the majority, the engineering system practically is ready. You see the water cooling system, you see the control system. Yes, and very important part of the cyclotron complex in new ECR source. Yes, and now he's ready and under testing. And you see the first results in the new cyclotron. It's the calcium charge state spectrum. And really, you see the table in which indicate the beam intensity, which we received today from ECR and source. Yes, our efficiency, new cyclotron, will be 50% instead 10% what we have today. And we expect to reach this ion beam current in the first stage. In case of the calcium, you see we reach in this cyclotron 10 particles and continue this work. And very important for us that in case of the titanium 50, we reach today 5 particle micro M. It's very good result for first testing. Yes, and June, September, this the really in October, that means the next month, the installation of decrease M of the cyclotron. This is according to our schedule. Mass separator. Yes. I told you that efficiency of our present separator about 35%. New separator, we expect that transmission will be 6%. And if you see this paper, dependence of the target thickness is very important and efficiency. You can see that really new separator, we can use the target with thickness about 0.5 milligram per square centimeter. Today we use around 0.3, 0.35. As results, the efficiency, total efficiency, will be 3 times more than we have today. The 10 times ion beam current today and 3 times separator. It means 30 times. The schedule for the practically the all part of the new separator are ready in the production of the Sigma Phi France, and the schedule commissioning August-November 2017, delivery of the power supplier to Flora Flap in our institute October, delivery of magnet November, installation October-December, and ready for first experiment September 2018. Yeah, this is the position of new gas field recoil separator. As you remember, we have 3 separate chamber. It's the line for separator. You see the photo. Of course, the next step will be developing not only synthesis, but study of the properties. First of all, the chemical properties, including the elements copernicum, nichonium, and fluorovium. Yes, and for this task, we ordered a new pre-separator. We don't have pre-separator for chemistry now. And it will be, you see the it's building cool, the dipole, cool dipole, and transmission. In case of the reaction of calcium 48, which we use for synthesis fluorovium and copernicum, it will be about 60%. It's very good for future chemical experiment. Very important for us, the targets. The high beam current, more square of the target. You see the target which we used previously, starting from Neptunium up to Californium, and now a mixture of the Californium isotopes. And only 2 scientific centers can produce this isotope. First of all, is the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, United States, and the Dmitrovgrad, the institute with using the CM3 the reactor. The previous scientific council, I told that according to the long-range program for Oak Ridge National Laboratory, shift factory indicate separately. Yes, then produce this isotope. Yes, know that with new accelerator facility with higher beam intensities, coming online, such as the super heavy element factory in Dubna, Russia. Only 1 week ago, the deputy director of Oak Ridge National Laboratory, Professor Jim Roberta, in his report on the 12th International Symposium on Super Heavy Elements in the Kazimir, Poland, indicate that this target material is available for factory, and especially in case of the berkelium, yes, they can produce for our experiment up to 30 milligrams of berkelium. It's very rare isotope. In previous experiment in which the element 117 was synthesized, we used only 12 milligrams. It's really the very hard job. To take to account this amount, we design new target block. You see the design. Our present target block, the diameter 120 millimeters, new, will be four times more. Never center have experience of using the high beam current like 5, 10 microamp. In this case, very important to increase the surface of the target. Yes, and that this target will be ready on the next year, exactly when we start first experiment. Very important is the titanium 50 instead of the calcium 48. Calcium 48 we use like metal. It's not possible in case of titanium. And jointly with our colleague from Strasbourg, that we developed the titanium 50 beam using the MIVOC method. MIVOC method, a metal iron volatile. It's the organic compound. You see the quite complicated formula. The starting material, we use the tetrachloride titanium with enrichment more than 90%. In case of the calcium, we use only 66% enrichment. Yes, and then two stage. First stage in the Strasbourg, and the final stage in the chemical laboratory of our institute, and efficiency of synthesis more than 90%. We test this technique, and now we accelerate the titanium 50 in accelerator U400, and have the first results in our separator Vasilisa. Today we reach the 0.5 particle microgram of titanium, only 4.5. As I told you, in new cyclotron, we will have at least 5 particle microm. Really, we will be ready in the next year. We will be ready to start the first experiment. And the aims of the first test of functionalities of the whole system of the new cyclotron, new accelerator, and new gas fuel recoil separator. Yes. First time we will use reaction calcium with americium, maybe calcium plus plutonium, because we have enough material. We know this reaction. It's relatively large cross-section. Yes, and this reaction is very good for testing of the accelerator complex. Then, very important, you see in the case of this reaction, the cross-section, at least 8, close to 10 picobar. Then we need to test two reactions. We need to understand the difference between reaction with calcium and titanium. We expect to use the curium 246 plus calcium and compound nuclei lawrencium, livermorium, 294, and the same compound nuclei in reaction of the plutonium 244 with titanium 50. Yes. This is the condition of experiment. And in case of the DC-280, new cyclotron, yes, we quite easy to reach the cross-section 0.2, 0.3 picobar. It's good for test of this reaction. And then, of course, our main goal to starting the experiment devoted the synthesis of 119 in the reaction of berkelium plus titanium, and 120 in reaction californium, mixture of the isotope californium with titanium 50. The schedule. We expect that three factory building will be ready December, the end of this year really, cyclotron. Yes, the assembling December this year, commissioning January, June. Gas fuel separator the same time. Then we need to have the license from our Russian authorities for exploitation of the cyclotron and so on. And onset of the first day experiment is September 2018. It's our plan. Yes, only, as I told you, only 1 week ago, our institute, jointly with our Polish colleague, yes, organized a special conference at the Trofkan Symposium Super Heavy Elements in Poland, Kazimierz Dolce. And that there are more than 100 scientists from the main center, which include in our activity Ganil, Rikin, GSI, Livermore, Oak Ridge, Vanderbilt, yes, Argonne Laboratory, Michigan University, MSU, and other take part in this conference. Yes, and the last day we have the round table with discussion of the future of our science. And you see the decision science vision. First of all, elements beyond that more than the 118 expansion of the periodic table. I told you that it's our first experiment to synthesis of new element. Nucleus beyond organism 294, expansion of the shard of nucleus. Yes, in this case we will use the mixture of the californium isotopes 299-251. Connecting hot fusion and cold fusion. Cold fusion gives us the nuclear proton-rich nuclei, the hot fusion, the neutron nuclei. But between, we don't have new isotope. We start this work with using the light isotope of plutonium, like plutonium-239, plutonium-240, and continue this research with using americium-241. Today we use americium-243. Then chemistry. I told you that is very important task of the future research. Yes, and excursion into the this region, long-lived, the super heavy elements. And his report, in the report of academician Aganisyan in the this meeting, he proposed new reaction is the calcium-14-8, not XN, but alpha-N. In this case, you produce more low Z, but more neutron-rich nuclei. It means that we expect to produce more longer-lived super-heavy, 112, 113, 114. It's quite interesting task for future, but this future need to high intensity and long and duration of experiment. And some, it's more task for our theoretics, including our laboratory of theoretic physics, yes. But the main requirements for new facility, as I tell you, high intensity and duration of experiment. We hope that our factory of super heavy element still be the leader of this science of science. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Sergei. One or two quick questions, if there are any. Okay, I see no questions, so we move to the to progress in the NICA project, which will be given by Vladimir Kekalidze. Vladimir, floor is yours.
Dear members of the Scientific Council, it's my pleasure to give you a very short presentation on the status of the NICA project. Scientific goal is well defined, so I'm not going to repeat it. It was many times presented. Just to go briefly through the main basic facilities of the NICA. As you know, this is an accelerator complex, including the injector part, booster, nucleotron, and two collider rings with two interaction points. And we have two experiments, one on the extracted beam called baryonic matter at nucleotron, and two in the two interaction points of the collider main rings, This is multipurpose detector and spin physics detector. I'm going step to step to present you the status and progress in development of each of these items. Concerning accelerator complex, the team working on that is not fully presented, but here I presented only the leaders responsible for some specific objects or sub-objects. And injection complex. Recently, it was last year, was commissioned the source of polarized ions, and it was successfully commissioned. You could see here the parameters of polarized protons and neutrons, these sources. Concerning the cryon, it's close to be commissioned. We expect to this year it will be commissioned. It will be the main source for the final collision of the gold-gold in the gold-gold mode. Concerning the Linux, we have two. The old one, LU20, which was essentially modernized, namely the new 4 injector was introduced and put in operation with the help of our partners in the Russian institutions mentioned here. And the heavy iron Linux was successfully commissioned last October. This is a common joint work with the German company Bevatech. You could see here the parameters. This will be just dedicated to the main program in iron-iron collisions up to gold. By the way, it's the first Linux with a transistor RF amplifiers at such power. Some additions are necessary to improve the LU20 because the new 4 injector was at the low energy beam transfer, but at a high, at the middle energy beam transfer, the bencher was missing at the first stage. This absence impact on the transmission of the beam. Theoretically, it could be 20%, but it was achieved just 10. But now, for the next year, we have planned to put this, to introduce this bencher, and we expect to improve to raise the transmission efficiencies at least 3 times. Concerning the nucleotron, this is old machine, which was. It was in operation since 1993, and during the last 7 years, it was essentially modernized. Now it could provide the energy, the acceleration, in potential acceleration of the gold up to energy, kinetic energy 4.4 GeV per unit. And concerning the protons, it could be energy provided up to 12 GeV. Because we are planning to operate with polarized protons and neutrons dedicated to the spin program. Just a few words concerning the last operation of the nucleotron. We have very successful last runs. The previous one, run 54, was accelerating the polarized neutrons and as a test polarized protons. You could see here that the accelerator R&D and experiments have been almost 70%, and more than 70% of the time was very efficiently used. And the cooling time and the preparation time or tuning and the reparation time is diminished to the real minimum time. This is just the example of the time distributed over experiments during the last run 54. You could see the bare man, this is the first experiment in the framework of the NICA scientific program got almost all planet time because you could see here the actual used time and the planet time. As well as accelerator physics was benefit of using this to develop some accelerator facilities. Just an example, for the first time the polarized proton was accelerated. You could see here the time, the energy which related to the magnetic field 1.6 Tesla, and the intensity of the beam, how it's developed along the time. The next round, we decided to extend it, not to have it only in October, December of this year, with this species of the ions, but as well to prolong it for the February, March, because we would like to complete our physics program. And just after this round, the booster assembly will be started, and it's the next essential milestone of the development of the accelerator facility. Concerning the booster, you could see here the design parameters. all the elements are already delivered and is under production. You could see the tunnel, it's almost ready to equip, to house all the equipment. And we plan to start commissioning in the next year of this machine. It would be the first essential milestone of the accelerator complex. You could see here the booster, electronic cooling system, and fabricated in Budker Institute of Nuclear Physics. You could see here already delivered electron cooling system to Dubna, and in May it was tuned. The magnetic field, the deviation from the nominal magnetic field was at the level of 10 to the minus 5. So it's relative. No, it's relative in magnetic fields. Again, the 2RF station already more than 1 year are delivered and ready for commissioning, just waiting to assembly to the tunnel of the booster. The project status is on schedule. Concerning the collider elements, again, the RF stations are developed at Budker Institute as well as electron cooler system, and all this design and are in progress. Concerning the magnetic system and optic, you could see that we have put the full configuration of the workshop for technological assembly and test of the magnets in November last year. Now it could produce a magnet at the full speed. And for the booster magnet, we have the following schedule. It's by the Friday of this month, last Friday. You could see here the dipoles. All the elements are produced, just more than half already test concerning quadruple doublets. This is in good progress concerning the correcting magnets. The yokes are delivered, but coils and the test still should be done. But we hope that by the end of this year, all the magnetic optics for the booster will be completed and will be ready for installation starting next year after the finishing of the round 55. Concerning the NICA Machine Advisory Committee, the last meeting was in May this year. The new chairman, Markus Steck, was elected from GSI. We express our deep gratitude to Boris Sharkov for many years contributing to the work of this committee. Thank you for that very much. And indeed, it was a very essential meeting, and their contribution to our project is very essential. We are deeply sensitive to this contribution, to the advices. And just a few recommendations or resumes of the last committees. The really considerable progress has been achieved since the period up to October, since October of 15. The MAC highly appreciates the official start of the collider civil construction, the results of the operation of the source of polarized ions, and the new RFQ for injector for nucleotron runs. The MAC congratulates the NICA team for commissioning of the new heavy ion LINAC accelerator, HILAC, and the facility for superconducting magnet assembly and and cryogenic test. The status of nucleotron corresponds to the requirement of the routine operation necessary for NICA, and some optimization of accelerator efficiency and the performance of the slow extraction of the BMN experiment to the BMN experiment have shown promising results, while an improvement of the spill structure of the accelerator beam is still necessary. Concerning the booster, preparation for the construction is progressing reasonably well. However, the delay in the delivery of the beam pipes, the beam position monitor, and the coils of the correction magnet challenges the project schedule. The proposed schedule looks very ambitious. The realization will strongly depend on available human resources. Indeed, it's a key point of our project. Collider, since the last meeting, the progress is good, but the lattice design is not completed yet. The status of stochastic cooling design is behind other systems. Significant efforts are required to catch up and to move it to the level required by the project. A realistic scenario of the accelerator operation with a polarized beam was not presented, and the possibility to achieve the proposed luminosity is an open issue. MAC advises to establish a special scientific group to deeply investigate those issues. This is the second term of our investigation because the polarized program is started in 2023. We have still time to follow those recommendations. MAC suggests that MAC meetings should be organized not less than one per year. In addition, it will be fruit fruitful to organize a workshop on the dedicated issue on the NICA project, on the beam dynamics concerning the NICA collider, etc. We are going strongly to follow those recommendations because we are deeply sensitive to the recommendations of this MAC. Now I'm going to the experimental program. First of all, the BMN, leader Kapishin Mikhail. This is baryonic matter at Nucleotron experiment. It's located in 160 meters from the extraction point from the Nucleotron, this facility, this typical magnetic spectrometer. The collaboration is step-to-step growing. You could see here is a list of present collaborators. And the physics goal, first of all, the study of the strange near and over the threshold, even under the threshold of their production, hyperons. Hadron femtoscopy, short-range correlations, even band fluctuations in medium modifications of hadrons, vector mesons, etc. Electromagnetic probes are very essential as well. And addition to this program have been approved by the last PAC. It came from our colleagues from the institution mentioned here. The leader is Piasecki from Tel Aviv University. The Nucleotron has a unique possibility to study the interaction between the nucleons at the region where the behavior of fission potentials changes from the repulsive to the attractive. Just this region is less studied, and we have possibility in the reaction of inverse kinematics, where the carbon beam interacts with the proton. It's an explosive reaction, so it could give us very precise definition, and we hope to start this program already in the next round. But the regular physics and the schedule of the BMN is presented here because this spectrometer will be developed in some stages. You could see here the stages, how it's going on. It's going according to the schedule. Just an example of the last run, the time resolution in the time of light system and the positioning of the first silicon detector installed just after the target indicates rather good perfection, you could see. And we are sensitive to the gem production, which is going on with the participation of our engineers and physicists at CERN workshop. You could see here the schedule. It slightly delays, but we cannot influence too much because CERN has too many orders, and we have rather good priority. But nevertheless, we are going to fulfill this plan to feed, finally, the program which indicates here. So the first physics run will start already this year with some limited equipment and apparatus. It will be continued in 2019 because 2018 the accelerator will be stopped due to two reasons. First of all, assembly of the booster, and second, the extraction beams for the civil construction will start just this year. So Nucleotron will be stopped for 1 year for those reasons. Concerning the main experiment in the heavy ion collision physics, this is a MPD, and this is a typical collider experiment with a superconducting magnet and apparatus inside, the study of hot and dense baryonic matter at the energy range of maximum net baryonic density. You could see here the collaboration is permanently growing, but we really need more people and more participants. We are going to put an operation again in two stages. At the first stage, which we should be ready by the 2020, it will be an operation only the magnet inside the main tracker TPC, fast forward detectors, fast hadron colorimetry for definition of the reaction plane and centrality, and the time of light system and ECAL. At the second stage, it will be supplemented by the end cap and the inner tracker system. So, status of the stage one, technical design report completed or close to completion. You could find on the web page the status of the technical design reports, and you could read it and to see the revision, etc. It's going according to the advice of our detector advisory committee. And you could see just I'm going through some items. This is a magnet production. It's going well. You could, because its major elements are produced at the ISG Genoa. It's a superconducting coil or the superconducting mass on the environments. But the iron yoke is produced at the Vitkovice heavy machinery in Czech Republic. You could see here that in the ISG, the winding machine was specially done for this magnet to do this coil. It's already operational. And it's going slightly delay with the schedule, but we hope to overcome this delay. Concerning the yoke production, you could see here those beams are almost all the produced. The supporting rings are all produced, and cups still needs some qualification of technical details. It's going very well. So we have no doubt that this magnet will be produced and delivered here in due time. Concerning the TPC, you could see here the recommendation in TDR. It's ready already. And how it's going on, some elements which are produced. And we have already clean room with all the necessary environment and the tooling to do this assembly. It's already delivered, and the assembly will start in this month already. It's going on schedule. The TPC electronic has some challenge because we expect some new chips which would be available only through CERN contract, and we are sensitive how it will go on. Concerning the time of flight system, you could see it's a huge system. We have more than 30,000 channels, and it's going according to the scale. TDR is ready under evaluation. Last tiny adjustment is going on. Electronics are already almost ready for the production. All the elements are in our hands. Even the integration is going all well developed. You could see here the design and how it's already realized in the real life, and all the connectors, all the integrations, all the cables and pipings are going well. The fast forward detector, again, the most advanced detector. You could see the efficiency in case of the gold-gold interaction, depending on the impact parameter. The efficiency is rather high. It's already at the, it's got the green line for the production. Electromagnetic colorimeter is a very challenging project because for the first time, Schaschlik-type colorimeter will be done in such big scale and in the projectile geometry. It means that all of the 43,000 such very complicated modules will be targeting to the interaction points. This will give us very high performance of the reconstruction and recognition of the showers from the gammas and the electrons. The fast forward hadron colorimeter have a very good performance according to the evaluation. It's a full responsibility for Institute of Nuclear Research, Russian Academy of Science. It going according to the schedule and even in advance, the schedule. The inner tracking system, it's challenging goal again because we are going to use MAPS technology, monolithic active pixel sensors, implemented for the first time for the ALICE project. And we will have the 6.7 billion pixels. It's a challenging project, and we are working in close cooperation with the ALICE, with the FAIR, with the JSI, and the workshop is in operation already 2 years. All the mock-ups are developed and tested, etc. It's going according to the schedule as well. Few words concerning the infrastructure. This is a cryogenic infrastructure. This is the heart of such accelerator complexes in ICA. You could see here the existing compressor station will be supplemented by the new compressor station, only doubled in the power. You could see some elements already delivered and some at the stage of the design. And the compressor, new compressor station, we at the stage to tender for the construction company, which should be completed by the end of this month. You could see here the parameters, etc. Some water chilling system, etc. It's going developing according to the schedule. This concerning the power consumption, which will be around at the 440 megawatt for the full scale of the project. And this responsibility of the chief engineer of Joint Institute. This, up to now, this considering this is transformer, which is essential part of the infrastructure of our institution. Concerning the civil construction, you could see here the site just a week ago, and it's how the west tunnel is already developed. You could see here the inside the west tunnel. The west tunnel close to completion. Even the second entrance to the lab is already opened, and the tender for the design company in September will be for the new building called Central NICA. We expect to have tendering for this design already by the end of this month. This is a schedule which we are trying to keep as it is now, not changing for the last 2 years. Just a few events, this is a building conference which you could see here attracts so many people, which mainly was dedicated to the discussion of the NICA project. One more picture. This is almost 40 students from Warsaw Technical University came to our laboratory to practice at the NICA facility. and many of them already expressed interest to continue their work at the NICA project. This is a future participants of our project. So, concluding remarks. The construction of accelerator complex is going well in close cooperation with Budker Institute of Nuclear Physics and other Russian institutions. The next major milestone is the booster commissioning. MAC keeps permanent supervision of the project. The construction of both detectors, BMN and MPD, is going close to the schedule. DAC evaluates the TDRs now of each of the elements. The MAC and DAC contributions are very important to the project success. The infrastructure is progressing with some delay. We hope to overcome this delay. The project has full financial ensuring. However, the chain of procurement proceedings requires an improvement, because we are doing for the first time such a high-scale project, and so all the systems should be adjusted to the fulfillment of this project in the time scale. The overall schedule will be revised by the end of the year based on this year plan fulfillment. Thank you for your attention. And this is from the plane, regular plane from Germany to Sheremetyevo, how NICA is seen. I hope from the satellite it will be seen as well soon.
Thank you very much. One or two general questions. Otherwise, the questions will be answered. Okay, please.
Well, first of all, thank you for this very dense report on really impressive progress. And you made once or twice a statement which makes me a little bit worried, namely that the schedule could really depend on the available manpower. Can you say a little bit more about that? And what
yes.
is the strategy? I mean, it would
yes,
be a pity if the manpower delays.
Thank you. This is a key issue, manpower. We are working permanently on that. With sometimes with success, sometimes without any success. First of all, concerning the accelerator, we should attract as many as possible from the Russian institutions. And already we are working very well with the Budker Institute. We rely on their very essential contribution, not only in the contractor way, but with advice, with participation coming and helping us put in operation the many elements produced in Budker or produced in our institution. We are trying to attract the new people from the institutions. Concerning the experiments, we are following the real very well already expressed in the practice the idea of the collaboration. Up to now, the collaboration is not fully formed in the more formal way, but we are working on that. And we expect that step by step new collaborators will join. Last year, six Mexican institutions expressed interest to join our project. And in addition, we are working with the universities and institutions for the students, which is an example of the Warsaw Technical University, to attract during their diploma work, to have the opportunity to attract them at the next stage, PhD students or postdoc students. This is a hard work, but we are not satisfied fully how we are doing it, but we are doing our best. We should improve this work.
One more question from Horst.
Sorry. The same direction. The whole thread here is whether you ever will get up to the high luminosity you promised. And the problem is not STAR with RIG low energy scan in the collider mode, but STAR with RIG energies in the fixed target mode.
Yes.
And so this will be run probably 19. So that is a big question. A long delay would cause a lot of lag with respect to the Americans. And the Chinese, of course, who are involved too.
No.
So I really can only encourage you to push this, to keep in the front. Yeah, your luminosities are pretty ambitious, and so to get there and to beat the RIG people in the fixed target mode will be very important.
Fully agree with you, Horst, because Brookhaven has a program which will start in 2 years in both beam energy scanning collider mode and the fixed target in the hollow of the beam. But fixed target has not so intensive beam, But if we will not succeed luminosity, we could lose as well. So luminosity is indeed is a top priority in these parameters.
Thank you. I think we thank you, Vladimir. And we now go to the scientific report on the quest for phase transition and strong interaction matter. And the speaker is Anna Ustanov, Deputy Director for Research, Institute of Physics at Baku, Azerbaijan.
Yes. First of all, I am immensely happy to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation. So we have heard a great talk about MPD at NICA, and I will talk along this line, to, along this punchline, which was presented by Vladimir Kikilidze. I will talk first about phase transitions then and now, and then phases in electromagnetically interacting matter, phases in strongly interacting matter, and we'll try to connect to seemingly different different directions, and then I will finalize my talk with experimental results, with summary and outlook in particular for NICA. Of course, you are all familiar with that, that typically when we start to talk about such kind of physics, we try to draw some parallels between the birth of the universe, between the Big Bang and little bangs we were creating in the Earth laboratories by interacting to nuclei. And the essential point here is that we all know that from experiment and also from theoretical calculations that universe during its expansion passes through different phase changes, and the remarkable one is a Higgs phase change, which is the Higgs particle, the only manifestation of this kind of phase transition. And there is another phase transition which has happened at the 10 microsecond after the Big Bang, and this is a phase transition when quarks and gluons combine and produce hadrons, so-called QCD phase transition. And we believe that exactly that 10 microseconds after the Big Bang we create in the laboratories, and then we can start to study this kind of phase transition, what happened. And in particular, to shed light on such invariant questions with the time, how mass of the proton emerges from constituent quarks, because if you sum up, you get factor more or less 100 less, and also how the confinement happening. So this, I want to mention that the mass of the proton has very little to do with the Higgs mechanism, with the Higgs particle, which was observed at CERN. Of course, that should be taken with a little grain of salt, because there have been such calculations recently, in particular, by Peter Bramersinger, Johann Wambach, or Burkhard Kemper. They used some kind of ansatz like charge neutrality, net lepton number equals net baryon number, and also constant entropy per baryon, and then started to calculate how universe has evolved in terms of these two parameters, which I will discuss repeatedly, the temperature of the universe and the baryon chemical potential of the universe. And that's a red curve which they has obtained. And that's these points here that are the points we obtain from experiments, so-called the chemical freeze-out points. The only thing what I want to do, one should be a little bit careful when saying that we recreate the instances of the universe at the laboratories. If that is true, that is true actually only at LHC. And this, of course, doesn't weaken our physics program at NICA or at FAIR, because in at the end of the day, we want to study the phase structure of this complete phase diagram of the QCD phase. And the fact that universe goes through along a different path doesn't mean that we shouldn't study this. And in particular, we want to study the phase transitions in the QCD and look whether there exists any kind of critical point, like in the case of electromagnetically interacting matter. And indeed, there are many experiments up and working. For example, Hades experiment at GSI, and the NA61 SHINE experiment at CERN SPS. Then we have Phoenix and STAR at RIC. And finally, last but not least, we have ALICE operating at LHC and aiming at the same physics. And during the time for such kind of matter, which we create in the interactions of heavy ions, We have gotten a lot of signals. So signal like, for example, transverse temperature of the kaons, and then we have several flow measurements. The measurements derivative of the directed flow at mid-rapidity, which was predicted by Hoch-Stoker as a signal for such kind of transition. And then many, many different signals. But unfortunately, of course, today I cannot go through all of them. Today I will expose one particular measurement which can be looked at NICA, and this is fluctuations of conserved charges from event to event. Of course, I intentionally marked it in red because it seems a little bit intriguing to have to look for the conservation or fluctuation of a conserved thing, because if something conserved, it should not fluctuate. But in fact, it does. So what are the phase transitions? What we know from our everyday life, we have water, we have gas, we have ice, we do have phase transitions. And all these phase transitions from our everyday life, this is driven by electromagnetic interaction, this we also know. And in particular in water, we have a phase transition because the molecules of the water are coming partially polarized, partially charged. The oxygen part has a negative charge, and that's why these different water molecules get hydrogen bonds. And when we increase the temperature, we break these hydrogen bonds rather than giving, when water starts to boil, and rather than giving kinetic energy to these molecules. That's the reason when water starts to boil, we give a heat, its temperature increases, it starts to boil, and its temperature stays constant when boiling starts. And until all the liquid evaporized, then the temperature stays constant and starts to raise again. Such kind of phase transition where we have this kind of discontinuity is called a first order phase transition. And another name connected to the first order phase transition is that we have a mixed phase. We have a mixed phase of a liquid with gas, and such kind of, this is a kind of definition, is called the first order phase transition. But of course, this boiling of water, the temperature at which water boils, it depends on the external pressure. The higher the pressure, the higher the boiling point. But not only that, because if you increase the pressure, what will happen to this plot? This horizontal part will shrink, and at the particular value of the pressure, if you plot it, there will be continuous line, and that's called the second order phase transition. So first order phase transition goes and ends up in the second order phase transition, which is called the critical point. And that can be plotted as a pressure versus volume. Pressure also stays constant when water boils. And these are these isotherms at different values of temperature. This is above critical point where you have no distinction between liquid and gas. And at some point when you decrease the temperature, then you have this inflation point, and that inflation point is called the critical point. But why it is important? It is important because at this point, derivative of the pressure with the volume is equal to zero by definition. And in the thermodynamics, I know in this system how the number of the molecules are fluctuating. And this fluctuation turns out to be equal to this parameter, which is called isothermal compressibility, which is defined in a way that this pressure, this derivative comes in a denominator. So you divide by zero, you get infinity, then fluctuations are tending to infinity. That's why we start to analyze and to look at this, that at the critical point, fluctuations in the system goes to infinity. And the essential point from this slide is that we need interactions for the phase transitions. That's a very important point. Without interactions, we cannot have any phase transitions, and we have large fluctuations near the critical point. And indeed, 100 years ago, that was realized by van der Waals, that in the ideal gas equation state, he put two parameters to have a phase transition. So we need interaction. This is the same picture, but with a global view. We have temperature, pressure, temperature. This is a boiling curve of water. All I wanted to say that this line goes and ends up in the critical point, after which we have no distinction between. And at this point, we have a very large fluctuations, which is confirmed by experiment, by the way, because in this experiment, you look at matter at different temperatures. This is ethan, and at the critical temperature, it starts to be opaque. So it changes its color. Otherwise, transparent medium starts to be opaque, and this opaqueness was explained exactly by the fact that there are large density fluctuations in the system, was explained by Einstein. So what happens in the strongly interacting matter? That was all about electromagnetical interacting matter, and we convinced us that we need an interaction. And indeed, in 1965, Hagedorn realized in his bootstrap model that if you consider resonances, like heavy particle consisting of lighter particle, lighter consists of light, and so on, so on, so on, like a Russian matryoshka. And then it turns out if you solve this problem mathematically, what will be the mass distribution of this heavy particle? It turns out it will have an exponential form. I mean, this is a very important point. And then you can have a system of such kind of resonances, and to find the macro parameters of this system, like temperature, density, and so on, you write down the partition function. This is in Russian called statistical sum. And then you look at this and take derivatives. So you get pressure, temperature, whatever, all the quantities you can get from there. But the point is, if particle mass is distributed according to the exponential spectrum, there is another exponential inside the partition function. And you have two temperatures, one of the Hagedorn temperature and one of the temperature of the system. You increase the temperature of the system by increasing the energy of the colliding nuclei. When you approach this Hagedorn temperature, this partition function goes to infinity. It diverges. And based on that, Steven Weinberg said at that time that our current theories cannot be applied to the temperatures above 100 MeV. So at that time, people were thinking that this is end of the theory. We have no theory yet that can be applied to the beginning of the universe. But luckily, it was realized that the fact that temperature stays constant, you increase the energy, temperature stays constant, this is like water boils. And in parallel, Gell-Mann was developing his quark model, and people have realized, in fact, this flattening of the temperature shows a phase transition from hadronic matter to the quark-gluon plasma. And that's why Khabibov and Parise came first time with such kind of plot. Density, temperature, here you have hadrons, here you have quark-gluon plasma. This was later worked out by Gordon Baim. And Gordon Baim plots here even two lines, says one is a chiral phase transition, another one is a deconfinement phase transition. These are not the same, actually. And then later in 1983, finally, it was realized in the lattice Monte Carlo that at least at the low densities, the chiral phase transition and the deconfinement phase transitions coincide. Just to show an experimental result, I want to make one point very clear here, because this is our instrument which we are using, and this is actually holy grail of all these developments. We use statistical ensemble, so if we have fluctuations in the system, what that means in a practical sense, we subdivide the system into different parts, and in the different parts we have the number of particles here, number of particles here, number of particles here, and if there are fluctuations, then particles should fluctuate from one box to another box. So that's what we are looking at. But then comes a very, very interesting suggestion that if the system in the equilibrium, then there is no difference between this box and this box, because if you look repeatedly to the system, each box will go through all configurations and all boxes will look like the same. The only thing now, if I want to find the mean number of particles here, I should find the probability with which the system can be in this state. And this is given by this probability from Grand Canonical Ensemble. And by the way, this normalization factor here is called exactly the partition function. So from partition function, now I can get, for example, mean number of particles in this box and variance of the particles in this box just by taking a derivative of the partition function with respect to the chemical potential. So that is what people are doing, and this was applied indeed to the experiment, and in the experiment, so our aim to find the temperature of the system and chemical potential of the system. What I told you in the previous slide, if you know chemical potential and mean number, you can find the probability that system in that state. We go here other way around. We experimentally measure all these mean multiplicities. So there is one example. In experiment, we measure distribution of our particles. We find its mean value. And then we start to apply this formula, which has two parameters, chemical potential and temperature, fit it, and then extract these two parameters, temperature and chemical potential, and eventually also volume. What we can see, there is a beautiful fit to the experimental data over many different particles, and this also extends by 3 orders in the energy and 9 orders of magnitude in the y-axis. So this is really perfect. And I remind you, we have just two parameters. We have many different measurements, and this is very nice. So summarizing that part, what we got from that fit, we got the temperature of the 156 mega electron volt for the freeze-out temperature of the hadrons. And lattice QCD calculations actually show us 154. Lattice calculates the transition from the quark gluon plasma to the hadron gas. So this means the system freezes out at the phase boundary. And based on that, we can plot the phase diagram now. This is the temperature, this is chemical potential, this is mass of the quarks. We have a realistic mass of the quarks. And what we have at the high values of the baryon chemical potential, we have first order phase transition, then we have no phase transition, we have crossover. And this is exactly the situation like with water, the definition of the critical point, then we have a critical point here. This is an experimental freeze-out curve, and Nika will be, if there's a critical point at this location, Nika will be able to probe this point. This plot here, also from lattice QCD, it shows the response of the system to the quark mass. So this is basically the fluctuation of the chiral condensate, which you will talk about. And this shows that at the transition temperature, chiral condensate fluctuates. So this is indicative of the phase transition, even at the zero baryochemical potential. Such kind of susceptibilities have been calculated in theory many times. So now I'm talking how to bridge experiment to the theory. In the experiment, we measure all these cumulants, so widths of the distribution, and then we want to relate it to the theory, and this is a theoretical calculation. So this all theoretical calculation on the lattice, this line here is a hadron resonance gas model, and this is the same thing for the fourth order cumulants divided by the second order cumulants. So we experimentally, we measure this, the numerator, and this is coming from theory. Then we compare to the theory whether we get what the theory predicts. And theory predicts actually the deviation from the standard hadron resonance gas model for the fourth cumulant of the second cumulant. This is hadron resonance gas model. This is theory. And we want to find experimentally this deviation, which indicates a phase transition. Yes. And this is a little bit of definition. I told this already. So what we do experimentally, we look to the distribution of the particle minus antiparticle, and then we look to different cumulants of this distribution. Second cumulant is just the variance of this distribution. Third cumulant, tails of the distribution. And fourth cumulant also shows a deviation of this distribution from a corresponding Gaussian distribution. And for example, if you like this explicitly for the second cumulant, it will be equal second cumulant for baryon minus antibaryon will be second cumulant of baryon plus antibaryon and minus the correlation term between them. There are particular examples. If you have a Poisson limit, then all cumulants are equals to the mean. And if you have in the Poisson limit no correlation term on top of that, then you will have a second cumulant of the net baryon will be just equal to the mean number of baryon plus mean number of antibaryon, and that's called a Skellum distribution. All our game in this field is to find a deviation from the Skellum distribution. Of course, we need to experiment. Time projection chamber was already presented. Time projection chamber is an essential part of this analysis. This is Ali's time projection chamber. Particles are flying. These are measured particles. That particle ionizes a gas which is in this volume, and then liberated electrons flow to the detectors, to the electrodes, and then we record the energy loss of the particle. There's a momentum. There's an energy loss we have measured. Momentum we measured from the curvature, and then the different particles get separated, and then by measuring this simultaneously, we know which particle we have measured, and this is also presented here. You put a momentum cut, you project it on the y-axis, and then you get such kind of distribution. Each distribution here is one particle. One more essential thing in this analysis is to find out what is the centrality of the collision. So we have to know how much overlap this nuclei are overlapping during the interaction. So this is a cross-section view. So you have one nuclei, another nuclei. You have nucleons inside. They are coming against each other, colliding. And to find out how many of these nucleons participated here, you have this interaction point. You place the detectors here, and then you can find a signal in the detector. In particular, in this particular case, this is a scintillators, and this is light from scintillators. If you have a more light, so this means they are more overlapping. If you have a less light, this means a less overlapping, and things like that. This, of course, this light from the scintillator depends on the charged, produced charged particles which are hitting the scintillators. This is plotted here, number of the charged particles, and this is number of this neutrons and protons which interact in the system. And in the experiment to select this overlapping range, we put a cut, a horizontal cut on this number of the charged particles. The more we put, the more overlap. And one thing what you see here, that if we put this cut along this line, the number of the participants which are here are fluctuating from one event to another event. This is actually a bad signal. So if I project this plot on this horizontal axis, so this means in my heavy ion collisions, I have a number of the participants from nuclei, and this number of the participants have distribution. So in one event, I will have 10 protons participating. In another, I have 20 protons participating. And this will mask at the end my signal, which I am after. So we have done such kind of estimation how much this effect that this itself, nucleus-nucleus collision is itself shaky, how much it affects the final results. I will not go into the details of this calculation. So these are single nucleons which participate in the reaction. From the single nucleons we produce in particles, and then we look how much the fluctuation of the single nucleons. In one event you have NW, then you have another one. How much this fluctuation of this big circles affects our results. This was published in the Nuclear Physics recently with Peter Braumensinger and Johannes Stachel. We did that. And then we obtained the result, experimental result. This is for the first time we presented in the quark matter in this year. So what is presented here, this is now very important, they presented this second cumulant or variance of the distribution which I have presented to you before, the variance of the distribution as a function of centrality, so as a function of the light we collect in the scintillator. These red points are our experimental measurements, and these open boxes exactly the scalum baseline. We wanted to have a deviation from the scalum, and we indeed see some deviation from the scalum because these are not overlapping. And in this plot, we plotted also the mean values of the proton and antiproton, which coincide at LHC. And then blue one is a second cumulant of the single proton distribution. So this is net proton, this is single proton. And our formula from that paper is that this measurement, which you see experimentally, has two parts. One part, which we are after and interested in, and the second part, which comes exactly from these fluctuations of these protons, initial protons I was telling about. But nicely and luckily, that this part gets scaled with a factor which is called mean number of protons minus mean number of antiprotons, which is zero at ALICE. So this part has no influence on our measurements. And indeed, we put all these green points. This is an input to our model. So these green points we put into our model, mean values of proton, and predicted this black line in our model, that this black line should be scalum distribution. And also we predicted a dashed line for this blue point. So you see everything goes along our prediction. But the only thing what we have here, still we have a deviation from the measured experimental measured values and the scalum distribution. So this is to be understood. And then we came with another idea, because we said that if you measure event-by-event fluctuations in the limit of the 4 pi, of course, number of the baryons are equal to the number of the antibaryons, so there should be no fluctuations, actually. And if you measure inside experimental acceptance, you still should have the remnant from this conservation loss, baryon number conservation. And we, in our paper, have derived that if you measure second cumulant of the proton minus antiproton and normalize it by the second cumulant of this reference, then this should be just 1 minus acceptance of the experiment. And acceptance means measured protons divide baryon to the 4 pi. We have done it as a function of the pseudorapidity, this analysis, and we indeed have seen that this depends on the acceptance, and moreover, it not only depends, but it depends in a way that we predicted. So all this deviation I was showing also in the previous slide with respect to this baseline is coming actually from the conservation law. And conservation law, of course, has to be subtracted from all this in discussions. And after subtraction, of course, we will get to 1, and 1 is a prediction from theory. So we are fully consistent with theoretical calculations, and more relevant for the NICA, there have been measurements of the same thing. So this is now fourth cumulant divided by the second cumulant, and if you have nothing, it should be one. We are looking for the deviation from one, and there is also third cumulant divided by second cumulant, which is marked in this way, in this funny way. But what people mean is the third to the second, and here also we measured the experimental rate points. This is 0.5% centrality as a function of energy, and you see here this has a kind of drop. And here it's even more interesting. It comes flat, which is predicted, then it comes down, and then it goes again up. Well, when I always talk about this plot, I say that these error bars are so sizable that from the statistical point of view, I cannot even tell whether it goes down or up, because this is too big error bars, too sizable. But nevertheless, even if it is there, I can tell you that if there is a critical point and STAR have indeed realized a critical point, theoreticians predict exactly this behavior. This going down before going up is extremely important. Without this going down, if it goes up, the fluctuations could get larger. This is not a signal for the critical point. But I don't know, maybe this is a kind of coincidence that it goes like that. I say all that because this picture does not match this picture. In the theoretical calculations, for the fourth cumulant, it is predicted like that if you have a critical point. But for the third cumulant, something different is predicted, and data is not coming even close to that. So there is a discrepancy, and this is actually very nice starting point would be for NICA, because NICA will work at the same energy, and if NICA measures it with incredible statistics, then we can find out what is happening in this range. Similar measurements have been produced by the NA61 SHINE experiment and NA49, and they measured in proton-proton data the same kind of fluctuations as a function of energy. This is the measurements with the green dots, and the line is from EPOS model calculation, and this is just showing that in proton-proton collision, whatever we have, we can get from the conservation laws. Here on this plot comes again another interesting thing from the NA61 experiment to be measured at NICA. This is kaon to pion ratio. This is not now fluctuations, mean number of kaons divided mean number of pions. What they observe, if you plot here, for example, proton, beryllium, carbon, silicon, and so on, we expected it will go up smoothly. But what happens, it goes flat, then all of a sudden it increases. I mean, this is... This was not expected. And this then we translated to the fluctuation measurement. It is now not important to discuss what is that. Important thing is that the prediction was it will all be along this line. So proton, proton, beryllium, beryllium, mononuclear. But what we measured for the argon, scandium, it suddenly drops down. So there are many, many things which are going up and down in a way that we do not fully understand that in the fluctuation measurement, and this is at all doesn't show that there is a critical point. And this is another range that can be explored by NICA and also this plot. So with this, I come to some future experiments. So in future, we will have two such kind of experiments looking at that. One will be MPD-NICA, one will be FIAT-GSI. There is a long-standing fight, which one is better, collider or fixed target experiment. I can tell you that neither is better. We need both of them. We need both this kind of setup and this kind of setup, and better in the same energy range. And here, data rates, which was already discussed in a question session. So collision energy, data rates, NICA is here, star fixed target, hardness, CBM goes high, and then we have a star. So NICA is really is a order of magnitude higher than this star beam energy scan here in the high energy range. And this energy range which NICA covers is a unique and missing in all kind of, in many kind of measurements. And I want to mention that this is the rate with which we write to the tape. It is not a detector rate. It is a readout rate. Okay, so I want to summarize that the measured second cumulance of at ALIS after correcting for baryon number conservation is in agreement with the prediction. That's what I showed you with this 1 minus alpha. And lattice QCD prediction exactly predicts the Skellam behavior, which we have observed. Net proton measurements from star hints for a non-monotonic behavior for energies below 40 GeV. And but here we need a more statistical statistics to draw from conclusions, and NA49 shows a violation of the models, which is not fully understood until now, and we measure higher moments in ALIS. But I want to finish with my outlook that summarizing all these measurements, some of them I didn't show. For example, this one, no clear evidence for the critical point, no direct evidence for the chiral symmetry restoration. This will be covered by Isaac Tseruya, but I have a feeling from experiment, just from experiment, we don't have a direct evidence that chiral symmetry gets restored. And we have missing hadronic yields in the Nika energy range, in particular multi-strange yields. And I think all these and other unresolved issues can and should be explored at the MPT Nika. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any one or two quick questions? Probably. Okay. Starting. Yeah. Okay. We have those two questions.
As always.
Go ahead.
I'd like to just add that the good old van der Waals, 150 years old now, Nobel Prize 110 years ago, that is actually also applied now to these issues by a student from Kiev, Motonenko and Vovchenko, two students. They have extended this theory into the quantum regime after 150 years. Nobody had done this before. They have extended it to the grand ensemble, and they have extended it to mixture of gases. And that is a very interesting new chemistry development, which now, of course, also bears fruit on your analysis, as you know very well. We just published the FISREF letters a few weeks ago, which showed that such a very simple theory, attraction, repulsion, yin, yang, can actually do very well on analysis of lattice QCD data, on analysis of fluctuations, which we discussed, very interesting new theoretical development, quantum van der Waals. Thank you.
A second comment or question, and that will be the last one. Yeah, please.
Sorry. Yeah. What are the phase transitions? What you told, yeah, but mainly in your talk, yeah, but it's some kind of the general course for phase transition.
Yes.
In principle, it's applicable for n entities. And I'd like to understand how it's dictated by QCD dynamics.
Yeah.
Because what you told, yeah, but it's...
To have a phase transition,
which kind of phase transition?
Any kind of phase transition. From one
any kind, it's clear, because it's general.
From, for example,
which are dictated by QCD,
yeah, exactly.
By QCD dynamics.
What I'm discussing, that's what I'm discussing. Mm-hmm. To have a phase transition dictated by QCD,
sure.
Kind of thermodynamical response functions, they are called, this is called susceptibility. How the system reacts to the external.
Yeah, what you are talking, yeah, but it's absolutely incorrect because
no.
You are talking about the equilibrated system.
Yeah, we are always talking about equilibrium.
No, but in the real physical experiment, we have no this kind of. Even this idea and the great success of hydrodynamics, which you know is really applicable for equilibrated system, means nothing after the discoveries of ALIS about the but the same behavior of azimuthal distributions, but in small systems and in but heavy ion collisions.
But, okay,
what means that? It's a crucial point now.
Please use microphone, Anar.
We are always talking about the system in equilibrium. So I want to, without the system equilibrium, all this breaks down. So we are not talking about non-equilibrium. And lattice QCD, which predicts a phase transition, is an equilibrium model. This is one.
Lattice QCD cannot predict so many things because, but
subject
it's not operable,
lunch.
But
we have to
for,
keep time.
I mean, for UCD with really so chemical potential, that it's so it's some kind of mystery, and you should not, how to say, mystificate.
Yes, and the second thing I want to say, just experimental thing, which I have presented, this fits, which you know also we did in Alice, in Peter Brown-Menzinger model.
No, but
what we assume here, equilibrium. And this is an equilibrium, and then inside this equilibrium we get a perfect match to the experimental data of the theory which is in equilibrium.
But it means nothing. It means nothing for QCD dynamics, for real QCD dynamics. It's what just I'm saying. But in principle, Brown-Münzinger, Johanna, and so all the causers, they are dealing with hadrons. It's not quarks and gluons. It's just the main idea. We would like to understand how this QCD dynamics influence and what is the impact of QCD. That's the point. And the crucial experiment now, it's just that similar behavior of the azimuthal distributions and, of course, the behavior of strangeness enhancement in proton-proton, in proton-nuclear, and heavy ion.
Strangeness enhancement, azimuthal distribution.
You should realize and you should understand answer of this question. That's the point. What you said, that it's okay, but...
Let me intervene at this stage. I think we need to resolve that during lunch. I suggest we sit and
talk. We will not. It is a lunch.
I understand it's a...
Sad that everything is clear. Yeah. I'm saying that nothing is clear.
Because, let's hold the discussion until lunch, okay? Because otherwise we will miss our... this is an important point, I understand, but not that... Okay, so thank you very much for your talk. I'm sorry to intervene in that way, but I think we have to keep to our schedule. Our last but not least scientific report is on probing denser matter at NICA energies with dileptons, prospects and challenges. And this is from Professor Isaac Tseruya, who has the floor now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank also the JNR management for the opportunity to give this talk. About dileptons, why we want to measure dileptons as a probe of dense matter at NICA energies and emphasize what the prospects and the challenges of the measurements are. So the outline of my talk is the following. I will first give you general motivation for the study, the measurement of dileptons. I will then try for about 10 to 12 minutes to summarize all what we have learned over 25 years of dilepton measurements done at SPS and at RIC. And then I will discuss the prospects and challenges for such measurements at the NICA energies and then summarize. So the motivation. So the dileptons, either if you measure electron pairs or muon pairs, are sensitive to the two fundamental properties of the QGP that were already mentioned in the previous talk, namely deconfinement and chiral symmetry restoration. And I will say a little bit more about chiral symmetry restoration because dileptons are unique in that sense. The basic quantity of interest when we measure this thing is actually the thermal radiation emitted by the system. And this thermal radiation, either in the form of real photons or in the form of virtual photons, that is dileptons, give us a direct fingerprint of the matter that has been created. So if we have created the quark gluon plasma, we measure dileptons that are coming from Q-cubar annihilation, then we know that we are talking about a QGP. If, on the other hand, the dileptons are coming, this is supposed to be pi plus, pi minus, going to rho, going to E plus E minus, going to dileptons. So if the dileptons come from the pion annihilation, then we know we are talking about the hadron gas. So it is a direct fingerprint of the matter, and it also provides an indication about what is the temperature of the system being thermal radiation. So let me elaborate a little bit about chiral symmetry restoration. The QCD Lagrangian has this mass term that actually breaks the chiral symmetry. So chiral symmetry is explicitly broken by the QCD Lagrangian by this term. If we now take an opposite case in which we put to zero the light quarks, the U and the D, which form the basics of our world. So in this chiral limit, then chiral symmetry is conserved. And as a consequence, each particle should have a partner, a chiral partner, with exactly the same mass and opposite parity. So that's what QCD tells us. If we turn U to D to zero, this is what should happen. Well, the mass of the U and the D are very, very small. Being so small, one expects to be not so far away from the chiral limit. However, if you look at the real world, the rho, its partner is the A1, and they have a mass gap of about 500 MeV. If you take the nucleon, its chiral partner is the N star, with a gap of about 600 MeV. This is much too high in order to be explained by the light masses of the U and the D quark. So one has to invoke that chiral symmetry is explicitly, is spontaneously broken in the system. Spontaneously meaning dynamics. So the dynamics break that symmetry. Now, if we have a symmetry breaking, we talk about an order parameter, and the order parameter that is associated with that is the quark condensate that has this type of value. Now, QCD has a solid prediction here. If you increase the density or the temperature, this quark condensate is supposed to go to zero. In that case, the chiral symmetry is almost fully restored. It's not fully restored because there is the mass term, the current mass term there, but the rho and the A1 should become almost degenerate. And the big question is, how is this degeneracy take place? How is it realized? What is the connection between the quark condensate and the hadron properties? So those questions didn't have an answer, at least theoretically, up to recently. And it is the combination of measurements and theory that is now building a picture how this chiral symmetry is restored. And I will try to show you that in the next slide. Actually, the experimental situation of all what we have learned over the past 25 years can be summarized, is very nicely summarized in this plot that actually shows the measurements of dileptons done by the N60 together with some theory. I will spend quite some time in order to explain all what is in this plot, and that is quite a lot. And I will do so by dividing the invariant mass of the dileptons in two regions. The small mass region, the low mass region below 1 GeV, and the intermediate mass region above 1 GeV. So let's start with the low masses. This has been measured at the SPS by two experiments, Ceres and NA60. It has been measured at RIC by Phoenix and Star. And it all started with this pioneering result from the Ceres experiment at the CERN SPS, in which you can see here the measurement of electron pairs, the invariant mass, from sulfur gold collisions at 200 GeV, and you see the data points are far above the predictions from the so-called hadronic cocktail, which represent our expectation from all the known sources of dileptons, pi zero Dalis decay, eta Dalis decay, rho omega phi, etc. So there is a very large enhancement of dileptons, and this was the trigger of all the interest in dileptons in heavy ion collisions. Ceres also observed later a large enhancement in lead-gold collisions at the full SPS energy. Here you can see 158 GeV, and this was the lowest energy that CERN could produce, 40 GeV per nucleon, and we also see a huge enhancement as compared to the cocktail. This is the last result from Ceres, measured in 2008, where we improved the mass resolution of the spectrometer. That you can see in all the systems that were studied by Ceres, there is a strong enhancement in low mass E plus pairs. And this was actually the first evidence of thermal radiation from the hadron gas. I mean, that was the source that was invoked in order to explain. I'm sorry again for this thing. This is supposed to be pi plus, pi minus, annihilated into a row, going into a virtual photon that then decays into a dilepton pair. But the vacuum row was not enough to explain the data. Here you can see the cocktail compared to the lead gold result. You add this channel of the pion annihilation, and then you go from here to here, so you enhance quite a bit the yield of the dileptons, but not quite to reproduce the data. In order to reproduce the data, one had to go further and then invoke a modification of the row in the medium. And there were two schools at the time. One that invoked the broadening of the row spectral function, that is the famous Rapp and Van Vach model that I will come to it several times during the talk, and the other was the conjecture, a dropping of the mass row that was put forward by Brown and Rowe. Both of them did a reasonable good job in reproducing the data, and the data were not precise enough to discriminate between the two models. This was done by NS60 with the high precision and high resolution data. Here you can see the excess observed by NS60, that is, they remove all the cocktail and they left only the row and the enhancement. And as you can see, this is very well reproduced by the Rapp and Van Vach curve. The brown row sits here, so it's completely ruled out by the experiment. So there is no dropping of the row mass, there is a broadening of the row in the medium. These results were confirmed later also by Ceres, and the picture was then that the enhancement of dileptons comes from the broadening of the row, and this model of Rapp and Van Vach told us that this broadening occurs mainly by the scattering of the row of baryons. The mesons didn't do too much in the broadening of the row, it's mainly the baryons. So now the question was, what to expect at RIC? So those are expectations, predictions, just before we did any measurements at RIC. As I mentioned, the baryons play a crucial density in these things. So this is an estimate that I made before we got to the measurement, in which we compare the baryon density at the SPS and at RIC, and they come to be roughly the same. I mean, if you look in the details, the participant nucleons drop dramatically when you go from SPS to RIC, but this is compensated by the production of baryons, antibaryons, which increase with the energy. So the sum of the two, the total baryon density basically remains constant, and the calculations of Rapp and Wambach predicted again the enhancement to persist at the Rick energies. And indeed, when we did the measurements at Rick, Phoenix and Star observed an enhancement with respect to the cocktail, but there was a problem. The two experiments were not compatible with each other. The results from Phoenix were way higher than those of Star, and you can see, for example, here the enhancement factors differ by more than a factor of 5 between the two experiments. This got resolved recently by the last results from Phoenix that we are taking with an improved setup, including an HPD and an improved analysis method. And with that, the results came compatible with those of STAR. Please note that the enhancement factor derived by Phoenix depends very much on what is used to calculate the correlated charm contribution, either the PTA or the MC@NL. Oh, it seems that this battery is getting weak. MC or... I will come to this difference in a few slides. And now, with the new results, the model of Rapp is able to reproduce the mass distribution, the PT distribution, the centrality distribution. The model does a very good job in reproducing all the data. STAR is measuring an energy scan of the dileptons, going from the energy of 200 GeV down to 19 GeV. An enhancement is seen with respect to the cocktail at all energies. This is quite well reproduced, again, by the RAP model. You can see the data and the calculations agreeing very well at all energies. So putting everything together, we have one model that describes all the SPS data up to the Rick energy, and it's quite well understood. Is this connected to chiral symmetry restoration? Well, as I told you, in order to make that connection, the best would be experimentally to measure A1 and to prove the A1 becomes degenerate with the rho. Well, we cannot measure the A1. It's a very difficult particle, a difficult measurement to do. But there is a combination, the same model of Rapp and Wambach that calculate the spectral function of the rho in the medium was used to calculate the A1 in the medium. And what it turns out is that you see that the rho spectral function becomes broad, doesn't move, but broadens as confirmed by the data. On the other hand, the A1 moves down as you increase the temperature, and eventually becomes degenerate with the rho. So the realization of chiral symmetry is understood by the combination of the two, the experimental results and the theoretical model, as being a broadening of the rho, a moving or a dropping of the A1, so that the two become degenerate. So that much for the low mass. Let me now turn to the intermediate mass region, and there the players are at SPS, NA60, at Rick, Phoenix, and Star. So I showed you this a moment ago to rule out the brown rho. And you can see here that there is an enhancement with respect that is not yet accounted for. It was first explained by the calculations of Rank and Rappert by invoking the QQ bar annihilation, that is the thermal radiation from the QGP. So if the enhancement in the low mass region, we invoke the hadron gas, the pion annihilation, here the explanation comes the QQ bar annihilation. What about Rick? Well, I show you this picture and I show you these numbers of the enhancement and that differ from PT and MCNLO. Let me explain that a little bit more. We fixed the PTA cross-section or the MCNLO cross-section by requiring the model to reproduce the dileptons measured, for example, in Deagol in the intermediate mass region. However, when you interpolate, you extrapolate this to M equals zero, the two models give you completely different predictions. So there is an uncertainty in the total cross-section that comes from those two models. A star does it differently. Star measures directly the D mesons, and they get another cross-section that happens to be more or less in between those two. So there is one problem, uncertainty in the cross-section. The other problem is that we know that the sea quarks lose energy in the medium. This has been demonstrated by Rick. The moment they scatter in the medium, then the correlation between the sea and the sea bar should get somewhat destroyed or modified. There is not a real model to account for this correlation. So we do have an uncertainty in the shape. And if we take the extreme case that the sea and the sea bar are completely randomized, you get this thing. So now you have the PTA with full correlation or with no correlation at all. The reality is somewhere in between. We don't have a way to properly model this thing. The way out is really to use a vertex detector that can veto the CC bar contribution. And this probably will be done in the next year. So lacking that, we don't have a clear identification of thermal radiation in the intermediate mass region at RIC. So that brings me to this master plot, in which you now see the excess of dileptons measured by NS60. This is the data points, and this is beautifully explained by the sum of two contributions. One is the hadron gas contribution, and the other is the QGP. In the low mass region, the thermal radiation from the hadron gas dominates. I don't know, is there any other pointer? This one is dying. The thermal radiation from the hadron gas dominates here in the mass, in the low mass region. However, in the high mass region, this is dominated by the thermal radiation from the QGP, and those two together do a beautiful job in reproducing all the dileptons spectrum. So that now brings to me to the lower energy and what we can expect from that. And there are, it's getting a very dense from the experimental point of view. Several experiments are trying to address that, and I will come to them in a moment. The motivation to study dense matter at low energies has been presented to this forum several times. Let me just briefly remind you that the matter at these energies of Nika is baryon-dominated, as opposed to SPS at RIC that are meson-dominated. The other thing is that in spite of the very low energies, there is enough density created in the medium, 3 to 6 times the normal nuclear matter density, and the lifetimes are long. Longer because essentially the collision, the passing time is longer when you lower the energy. So all this gives you the normal motivation to study dileptons under the highest baryon density, study where the excess starts, what is the onset, what are the possible effects of the critical endpoint or first order phase transition or whatever. All this is well taken, but I think there is much more beyond that, and the much more comes from the theory, from the model that we have that so beautifully explains all the data that we have up to now. And here are some consequences of the model of RAP by pushing the calculations to lower and lower energies. And they have done it up to 6 GeV in center of mass energy. So what they see, what they claim is that even at 6 GeV, the system is in the form of a quark-gluon plasma, and thermal radiation from the QGP should be observable. These are the initial temperatures that are coming from their calculation. And now, if you use the slope of the intermediate mass dileptons, this slope represents the average temperature of the system over the lifetime of the QGP. So it's not the initial temperature, it's the average temperature of the system. And you see that it tracks the initial temperature very well. So by measuring the intermediate mass dilepton, we should get a hint of the temperature of the system. Furthermore, they also found, and this is empirical, that if you integrate the yield of the excess in the low mass region, this yield tracks the total lifetime of the system. Here is the lifetime of the QGP, this is the lifetime of the hadron gas. The sum of the two gives you the solid line, and this thing tracks quite remarkably well the excess measure in the low mass region that is shown by the solid line. So the measurement of dileptons at these lower energies would provide not only a thermometer but also a chronometer for the system. And the question is whether those measurements can be done at all, because this is just the slope of the spectrum. The question is what the yields are. So these are the yields. I'm sorry about this little problem. You have to turn this by 90 degrees. I hope you can see. You can see here the QGP component and the hadron gas component and the sum, very similar to what happened at the high energy that I showed you before. The problem is that the cross sections are down by about two orders of magnitude, making this measurement extremely challenging. The good news is that the charm cross section is way down. You can see here the total charm cross section as a function of Roth root S. This thing doesn't go to the energy regime that we are addressing here below, 10 GeV, 6 GeV somewhere here. So the cross sections are negligible and one can forget altogether the contribution. So it should be a clean measurement to do the dileptons in the intermediate mass region. So who can do it? This is the energy map of all the dilepton experiments up to now. Below this dashed line are the experiments that have been completed so far. Between here and here, you can see the experiments that are currently running. And above these lines are the experiments that are being planned or thinking about. To really see what can be done, one has to look at the interaction rates as a function of collision energy. STAR will have a combination of a fixed target measurements together with collider, and they will be able to measure the dileptons. I'm told that they will not be able to go below 12 GeV in the collider mode because the luminosity drops too much. In the fixed target, they will be able to do this, so there will be a gap that they will probably not be able to measure the dileptons. NICA and NPD are well placed to cover the full energy range. CBM covers part of it, and so those are the players that can potentially contribute to that. I looked, not real simulation, but just some back of the envelope concerning the MPD at NICA to see whether it could measure the intermediate mass dileptons of these energies. And my estimate is that at a root S of HGV, in this mass interval, one should get something like 400 pairs in 10 days, and lowering the energy to 6 GeV brings this down to about 50 pairs per 10 days. Again, this is not a full simulation, but this is an indication that it, MPD is well, very well placed to perform these measurements. So I hope that these things will be further studied in better details by the MPD team. So this actually brings to my summary. All systems so far show an enhancement of dileptons. This enhancement is explained by one single model that is very successful. It explains the enhancement in the intermediate mass region as being thermal radiation from QGP, and then can serve as a thermometer for the system. It identifies the enhancement in the low mass region as the thermal radiation from the hadron gas, and as such can contribute as a measurement of the lifetime of the system. And the emerging picture that we have for the realization of chiral symmetry restoration is that the rho meson broadens in the medium and the A1 drops mass and eventually becomes degenerate with the rho. There are two things missing to make this picture absolutely perfect. And this is that we are lacking the identification of the thermal radiation at RIC. I mentioned that. The problem is the charm contribution. We need to master that. There is another thing that would be very nice to measure is the elliptic flow of the dileptron. This has not been done, and maybe I didn't have any time to elaborate on it, but maybe it will be done. Now, taking the successful of this model as a kind of lever arm towards the lower energies, we do have very clear predictions and a strong perspective for the study of dileptons at the NICA energies, and the MPD is very well suited for that. Thank you very much.
We have time for a few questions. Okay, start with.
Thank you for this very nice talk. Can you see in this data also some correlation with deconfining effects?
Sure. I mean, if you have coagulon plasma, by default, you have deconfinement.
And when you have deconfinement?
No, I mean, what we believe is that the two phenomena occur more or less simultaneously. There is no way that I can say this one comes first in time and the second one. That thing is not accessible by measurement. But both phenomena occur at very similar conditions. This is backed by all QCD calculations so far.
Right. Let me continue with this question. Can I continue with the same question? Yeah. Can I continue with the same question? It seems contradictory that you have signals for chiral symmetry restoration by looking at rho and A1, and at the same time you think that chiral symmetry restoration occurs simultaneously with deconfinement phase transition.
Okay,
Is it not self-contradictory?
No. Let me try to be a little bit more specific. If you look at the collision as a function of time, the initial thing that you form is a coagulon plasma. Coagulon plasma, there are no hadrons, okay? There is no rho, there is no A1. So that you have the plasma, this plasma may decay by QQ bar annihilation, and then you get the signature through the dileptons. So this is one. Now the system cools down. Eventually it hadronizes. At the boundary of the hadronization, when particles start to appear, the system is still very dense. At that point, you see effects of chiral symmetry restoration. Okay?
Is there any hope to see the A1 mass drop in the future?
No, not that I know. Not that I know.
Last short. What is your Trell Young contribution at NICA?
Yeah.
And I'm not talking boredom Trell Young. I'm talking real anti-quarks hitting real quarks and not the C quark.
Very good question.
We published this long time ago for NA50.
Yes.
And now we go even lower in energy, so there should be a huge increase, like Danny Ashery has discovered at Fermilab. Yeah.
There is no real solid calculation of the Trell Young at these very low energies. There were some estimates that I got from RAP, actually. I didn't include that here because he doesn't trust them. He asked me not, don't show that in public, so I don't do it, but I can tell you. His estimate was that this is small. It's not negligible. One has to measure it. The way to do it experimentally is you will do PP collisions. PP collision will tell you the Trell Young. Then you will scale it up.
Your emphasis was on dileptons.
Wait a second. Is you?
Oops.
Okay.
Okay. Your emphasis was on, short question, on dileptons. How about direct photons?
Very good question. Direct photons is also a way, the real photon is also a way to measure the temperature of the plasma. In my opinion, dileptons are more powerful because the background is smaller in dileptons than with the photons. With the photons, and the reason is because dileptons has another handle, is the mass. With the mass, you can discriminate most of the large background coming from pi zero Dalits. You can just take it away because you don't look there. On the other hand, when you measure direct photons or real photons, then the whole spectrum is contaminated by the huge amount of the background, including the pi zeros. They are there, you cannot take them out. So the sensitivity of the photon measurement is smaller than the dilepton measurement. But eventually, maybe it can be done. I mean, it's been done at RIC. Yes? Ah, sorry.
Eventually, first of all,
I'd like to thank you because it was really so very good question, very good talk. Absolutely, and it was always very clear as all your talks. And what is I'd like to emphasize, especially, it was really honest. Okay. It was really honest. No, that mixture between deconfinement and chiral symmetry restoration. But I had a question concerning the direct photons and photon access, measured by Phoenix at BNL. But it was asked, and you partially. Answered. Then my only question is, are you sure that all the, models are well scrutinized when you refer to the RAP-Hayes paper?
Well, the only thing I see up to now, all the data that we have is very well reproduced by RAP model, and I should say to his credit that Phoenix has this wrong measurement published in 2010, and for 4 years, RAP say, I cannot reproduce this. He didn't try to twist his model to make it reproduce the data. So
it means that, It means that it's just the RAP responsibility.
And up to now, all the data is consistent with this model, very well reproduced. So
answer is yes, it's well scrutinized. Yes. Okay, thank you very much.
Yes.
No.
Okay, we've had this side. Any questions this side? Okay. Thank you very much again. And we deserve lunch now. I hope it's ready. We should reconvene at 3 p.m. Make sure that you return because.